Support for New Day comes from the Jed Foundation. Jed takes a comprehensive approach to protecting mental health and preventing suicide among teens and young adults with programs for individuals, families, schools, and communities. The Jed Media team believes storytelling can change and save lives and is proud to partner with Lemonada Media on this journey. Thank you for joining us, too. Learn more at jedfoundation.org.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Hi, I'm Claire Bidwell Smith. Welcome to New Day. I don't know about you, but December and the holiday season in general can be a really hard time for me. Like a lot of us who've lost a loved one, my grief can really resurface in big ways at this time of year. I miss my parents. I wish they were here to celebrate with my kids, to do festive holiday stuff, and just be part of my present life and not just my past. But here's what I've learned, both personally and in my work as a grief therapist. It's really important to find ways to stay connected to the people we've lost. It's not necessarily something that comes right away after a loss. In the first months and years, you just want your person here in the physical form, the way they always were. But as time goes on, I think we can find ways to cultivate internal and spiritual relationships with the people we love. And I really believe that this feels better than no relationship at all. Years ago, I went on a journey to figure out how to restore these connections for myself, a process I write about in my book, After This. I did all kinds of things, looking for ways to connect to my parents and others I've lost. I talked to rabbis and priests, I did past life regressions, and I danced in shamanic circles. I also saw probably a dozen psychic mediums. My guest today, Fleur, is one of those mediums. Fleur writes and teaches about how to deepen your intuition and spiritual connection to yourself. Through her work as a psychic medium, she connects people all over the world to loved ones that they've lost, helping them heal and understand their own stories, and even helping them to forgive and feel forgiven. As you'll hear in our conversation, just one session with Fleur can help us understand that the loved ones we've lost are still here with us, communicating and offering support in invisible ways. You can be skeptical all you want. I know that I was, and still am most of the time. But what I finally decided is that I don't really care if I can prove that psychic ability is real. What matters is that I feel a sense of connection. Hi, Fleur. Welcome.
Hey, Claire. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on New Day. This podcast is about how we find meaning, how we move forward in our lives, how we get up the next day when we're going through hard stuff. And I'm thinking about the last year and the general overall hard stuff, yes, but all of the loss, all of the death. So talking to a psychic medium, while unconventional, is I think a really interesting way to look at what some people have been going through and how they move through it. On my end, in my work as a grief therapist, I have just seen so many people who've lost someone to COVID. It's been a year unlike any other in terms of grief and loss in our world, in our culture. And I have actually heard people talk about grief and loss more than I ever had, which is heartening in a lot of ways, while also hard.
Absolutely.
But let's start with how we met, because I feel like I want to introduce people who aren't familiar with psychic mediums or aren't comfortable with the idea, or who just don't believe in them, to you. And so, hi.
Hey, I'm here for it.
We met when I lost one of my very best friends 6 years ago. Her name was Abby, and she and I were similar ages with children. She died of breast cancer that came on very suddenly, and it was a really
tremendously hard loss for her family, her husband and children, and all of us who loved her. And I was also writing a book about the afterlife at the time. And I was talking to psychic mediums and shamans and Buddhism and rabbis and just really getting into all the different ways that we think about how we stay connected with the people that we lose and love and how we think about what happens next. And I thought I was done with the book. I actually was done with the book. And I was over at my friend's house with her husband one night, and he gets an email from a woman at her daughter's school who had gone to one of your psychic medium shows in Santa Monica. And Abby had come through, and this woman wrote this email to her husband about it. And I said, oh my gosh, I have to go. I have to go see this psychic medium. Maybe I'm not done with the book. And when I booked my appointment with you, you did not have the waiting list that you do now.
I think you got in pretty fast.
I did. I got in a few weeks later, but it happened to be the day after I got home from Abby's memorial service on the East Coast. And so it was a very poignant time. And I walked into your office, and the first thing I thought was that you were so cute and young, and it was surprising, and you had very cute shoes on. And then we had one of the most amazing psychic medium sessions I've ever had. Mm. What do you remember about that day?
Well, taking it back to the show, I do actually remember the Abby moment, because in my shows, I will go to somebody in the audience and tell them about somebody that they have lost and give details. And all I ask for is a yes or a no. And in the Abby incident, I was giving the information and nobody was really able to take it except for a woman who said, you know, I don't know this woman very well. What you're saying all makes sense. The number of kids, the way she was, the way she passed, all the things. I don't know her personally, but I do know her husband and I can pass on the message. And that's kind of how we ended it that night, with me going, oh, thank goodness, we've found our recipient. Let's just move on, you know, and really not thinking much more about it, other than it had been a little bit uncomfortable because I couldn't find the recipient for a little bit of time there. And then I got that email. You know, I don't really ever remember my readings, so it was quite fun to read about it in your book. And
wait, why don't you remember your readings?
Well, because first of all, I do so many of them. And secondly, I do think I go into a little bit of a meditative state. So I really walk out, and it might also, to be honest, be a little bit of a just way to maintain the work-life balance. I don't ask my mental mind to remember it. So I might remember it for the next day, but then sometimes if I've got a lot of readings, if you ask me by 5 p.m., I do not remember the 10 a.m. Like, I have no idea. So I think it's in a way just maintaining a work-life balance. In a way, it's also because I'm in a meditative state. And in a way, it's because I just see so many people and the stories run together.
I understand that. I've seen hundreds, maybe thousands of people, probably thousands in grief work, and I can't remember all of it. It takes a lot of energy out of us. I think in order to do good work, we do have to take care of ourselves.
Absolutely. Yes. And so I don't remember your reading so much. I remember meeting you, and then I remember getting the book afterwards. And we've both joked about how we don't usually kind of make friends in our work in terms of clients and that kind of thing. But we became friends, and then I somehow ended up on your porch with a glass of wine and just enjoying your friendship from that point on.
Yes. You know, I was at a point in my book process where I had seen probably 24 psychic mediums. But truthfully, I went into that book and that journey of seeing psychic mediums, of looking into the afterlife, I went into it very skeptical. I mean, I really didn't believe in psychic mediums. And I also kind of didn't want to believe. And I just couldn't make it make sense in my head. I've never had any supernatural experiences, even though I would like to. I'm open to it. It has not happened. But I went into it really skeptical. But then I kept having these experiences with mediums that really blew my mind, frankly. I remember walking out of one in Chicago that I saw, and I remember walking out and going to a Starbucks across the street, and I felt like the Matrix. Like, I felt like I had just woken up and nothing was what I thought it was, because the things that she had brought through and the connections that she had just so authentically validated in my life. I couldn't I just didn't know how to make sense of it.
Yeah.
But I kept going with the journey. And then I also had a lot of other spiritual experiences. So the whole thing really expanded to the point where I was very open at the point I met you. I was like, okay, even if I can't explain it, I don't know if it's real, I can't prove it, something is happening and I'm changing as a result. My sense of connection to the people I've lost and my thoughts about what my clients were going through, it was changing. But that was a whole five-year journey for me. For someone who's not familiar with this and who is probably skeptical like I was, can you talk about what it is to be a psychic medium? What does that mean? Is it real? All the things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to quickly touch on the skepticism part too. I don't think you have to be a quote unquote believer in anything to go see a psychic medium. I really welcome skepticism. I myself still hold skepticism. I think it's really healthy as long as your mind is somewhat open or you're willing to just have an experience, then there's infinite possibility on the other end of that. You know, you don't have to come in being somebody who actually believes in any of it. Just kind of open to an experience. I think that's all it takes. But the way that people come to see me and really what a psychic medium is twofold. Some people come in needing some clarity around their own life. And then other people come in really wanting to connect to people who have passed over. Probably what I'm more well known for is the mediumship side of things. So people who are passed over. And that process for me is one in which I'm reading energy. So it's the idea that energy continues, consciousness continues in some shape and still holds intelligence. The connecting then for me to the other side is one in which I'm trying to find somebody's energetic signal, so to speak. So I like to tell my clients, it's like every single one of us has a radio station. I'm tuning into that radio station. I'm finding theirs. I'm bridging the gap. And then through that, have the experience of being able to see, feel, hear, know things that people would go, how would you possibly know that? You know, and that's the goal is ultimately to allow that connection to bring closure and clarity and healing and a step forward. So my goal is always you see me once, you never have to see me again. And off you go to other people who can help you in your grieving and your expansion. I really see myself as somebody who just opens up a different way, maybe a perspective or shifts something about the grief journey.
And this is how you and I have really come to appreciate each other and our work, because in my work as a grief therapist, I can see a client for a year, 2 years, and sometimes we can only get to a certain point. And that person is maybe stuck in a certain area of guilt or regret or anger, or just really ruminating on something around the death. And one session with you gives them the sense that their person is still here, that they are forgiven for things. It's a really fascinating thing. And then I know on the other end, you have clients who still need some grief therapy after
Absolutely.
They've seen you. So we've had this really interesting crossover and just curiosity about each other's work.
Yeah. And it's been such a joy to have people like you refer me and other therapists. I've even had like people come through from doctors. And in the beginning, I thought, oh my gosh, there's one nutty doctor out there who's recommending people to a psychic medium. But over time, it's been many more people. And it's been so lovely to see that we have this understanding grief is layered, it's going to require different modalities. No one can maybe have the one-stop shop for grief. It's going to take all sorts of people in community, and I love having people to be able to recommend. And also each person's individual, you know, so like a medium is not going to work for everybody, but that's okay. Can be part of the package or not at all. And I find real comfort in being able to take clients and offer them the next step where I can't take them, kind of that continued process that somebody to check in with weekly. I can't do that for them, but you can.
I love that there's no one solution to grief or one way to move through the healing process of it. I wholeheartedly agree. What I came to in terms of referring clients to a psychic medium was what I've seen in the grief process is the thing that becomes the most healing. And this is not something that people can get to early on in their grief, but the thing that becomes the most healing is for someone to find a new sense of connection with their person. I think we feel an incredible sense of incongruence and pain and angst when we have a loved one that we've been so close with and who's been in our life, maybe a short time, maybe all of your life, and now they're gone and your whole being yearns to talk to them.
Yeah.
And And often we have the mindset that we can't. It's over. It's done. They're gone. Mm-hmm. That's it. And so a lot of the work I do is helping people find a new way to commune with their person, a new way to find a sense of connection, whether it's an internal relationship, whether it's a spiritual one. And so certain clients I will absolutely send your way, because even if I don't know if it's real and can't prove it, having them feel that they have a new sense of connection and that they are still in communion with this person that they love so much, that is the most healing thing that there can be.
Absolutely. And I love what you said about it not being available in the very beginning, because I do make a point of asking and telling people I can't read for you until you're at a certain point, because you have to go through that initial phase of sitting with a grief therapist or sitting with your own self and moving through that initial shock and loss. No medium can bring anybody back. And it does, I think, really require a certain time period for most people. You know, there's no one size fits all, but I really love seeing people at least 6 months into a loss, because then I think the work is able to help them bridge that next step versus right from the very beginning when, you know, it's normal, it's human to want to just grab on and hold on to something. And unfortunately, medium can't bring anybody back, but we can
absolutely
help bridge.
It took me years to be able to even think about having a different kind of connection with my mom. I just wanted her here in the flesh. There was no other option. And I was in agony. And it took me a long time to come around to a different place with that. And now I actually feel closer to her now than I did for the first 5 years after she was gone. And, you know, I see that with a lot of my clients. I think grief is a beautiful process that we go through in our lives. Everyone will go through it. There's no escaping grief, whether it's the grief of a person we've lost, or it's a job change, or it's health, or kids home from school in a pandemic. Like, we are always grieving something. Loss is about change, and we have to move through some kind of recognition and acknowledgement of those shifts. And so grief is this beautiful opportunity to learn about ourselves and see the world in different ways.
Yeah, it's a catalyst, and yeah, it's not going to let you not change.
So one of the big things that I have been seeing in my clients who have lost someone during COVID is so many people did not get to be there when their person died. They dropped them at the hospital doors thinking that they would be okay and they would see them in a day or two, and they never saw them again. They weren't allowed to be in the hospital. They maybe had a FaceTime goodbye through a nurse or a doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, I have chills as I'm talking about it. So many stories like this during the pandemic. And I'm sitting with these clients who just can't move through that. They're still really stuck in this feeling of just wanting to have been there and feeling like they didn't show up for their person, mm-hmm, or something was stolen from them. Just that not being able to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you can talk about that and what you see, because I know this isn't specifically happening just during the pandemic. This happens frequently. I've had many clients who weren't able to say goodbye. There's many instances when that happens to us, but I'm wondering what that looks like on your end.
It's a very common thing to come through in readings. I would say even before the pandemic and much more now, this theme of what does my loved one think about me not having been there? Are they mad? Are they angry? Is there a continuation of division because we didn't get the last moment? And unanimously across the board, it always comes up in a reading if there's been some sort of disconnect there that wasn't accomplished. And it always comes up, and from a perspective of, from the spirit side of things, really doesn't matter. Like, they're much more concerned about the people staying behind and their emotions around it. So a lot of that conversation is about, first of all, from the spirit side, you know, I'm fine. I'm not holding on to that last moment. My life is made up of many more moments, not just that last one. We have a connection that surpasses that last 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 hours. We have a whole lifetime together. Like, let's focus on the lifetime. Let's not focus on the end, because the lifetime overshadows the end by so much more love and connection. And the other thing that I find very interesting is once we get to the spirit side of things, time, space are not limitations. So it's very often brought up what somebody is saying, doing, connecting with, even from a distance. So I've had experience in which somebody in spirit might say, the moment that I passed, you were driving in the car and your dog was in the passenger seat, you know, and I came to like take that car ride with you. Or moments of, I know what you were doing. I know who you were with. I know how you were grieving. Time space is important for us, not in the continuation of life. It's a hard one for us to wrap our head around because that is our entire understanding and container of life. But I find that to be comforting for people. I also think moving forward for myself, even if I've ever, if I'm ever in a position where I can't be with someone, just knowing that I could energetically be a part of it, I think can be really powerful.
What about for people who feel that their loved one really suffered at the end, whether it was suffering to illness, mental illness, suicide? I have a lot of clients really struggling to grapple with how to feel at peace. They just don't. They feel that their person really suffered and went through some agony at the end.
Absolutely. Well, suffering is a condition, of course, of the human form. And so it's always a memory. And I feel that there are certainly times in all of our lives where we've had some experience of pain, and then we look back at it and think, oh, I have a memory of how bad that was, right? But it's not a continued experience. So I certainly, as a medium, can't say, oh, no one felt any pain at the end of their life. That's just not the reality of it. But the spirit doesn't hold the memory, or really experience doesn't get carried over, transferred to the other side. And a lot of times, I will say, it feels to me, or my vantage point of it, when the spirit knows they're passing, there's a deep intelligence in that. And there's a deep sense of, okay, well, if we're not staying in the physical body, we're going to go. So even though the physical body might still seem to be connected, there's already an untethering, a disconnecting. And so that pain, that experience isn't nearly as heightened, nearly as present. They've got one foot out the door, so to speak.
And I've seen that up, you know, personally with my father, with my mother, with hospice patients I've worked with. And they're not there in the way that they normally are. And it's not in a medication kind of way. They just aren't there anymore. I take comfort in that, in what you're saying. And I hope others do as well, because I know it's something that just, it's like we're the ones that suffer, you know?
100%. If there is one through line of this work, it's the sense of sometimes sitting in front of somebody and I'm connecting to their loved ones on the other side and I'm in full conversation and we're connecting and it's wonderful and it feels blissful and lovely. And I look at the person sitting in front of me and they are, of course, like really emotionally overwhelmed. And there's almost this moment where I'm like, oh, I wish I could have you feel what I'm feeling, because it's a party. Like we're good. Do you know? Like if you could know the freedom, connection, bliss of this feeling, we wouldn't grieve nearly as much knowing that our loved one, we'd still, of course, be hard. There's still disconnect. There's still a severance of the physical connection, but it doesn't, I don't have any way to translate that to somebody unless I'm able to teach them how to feel it, which is possible, I think, for anybody.
That was my next question. Yeah. How can we do what you do, even if on just a small level?
Yeah, well, I think everyone can. And the reason being is because you are a spirit, soul, life force, consciousness right now in the body. You have all the parts that you need in order to make the connection to someone who is only the spirit. You just have a differentiation of your container, so to speak. The idea that we are spirits living in a physical body, not, you know, having a completely physical life. Like we are spiritual beings by our very nature. And so we have all the parts we need. It's simply a moment of then being able to quiet our minds and start to witness, pay attention, and kind of believe ultimately that we can do it. I think that's the biggest thing I see with my students is if you don't believe you can do something, you can't do it. Even the physical feat of that guy who ran the 4-minute mile, you know, it was considered not possible to run a 4-minute mile. One guy did it. In that same year, 12 other people did it. Like there's this belief about this. And I really feel like it's so interesting to watch Gen Z, for example, who is so much more open and so much more available to emotions and spirituality and all this stuff. I'm thinking that in my generation, I will see people become more mediumistic than we've ever had before, more psychic, able to stand in their power in a way that right now we don't even know that's possible because our own belief systems are holding us apart from it. So that's the biggest jump, is this sense of, can I get out of my way long enough to have the experience, not immediately rationalize it away, give myself the benefit of the doubt so I can have another experience, so I can grow and expand on this.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And we would like to invite you on a hilarious and heartfelt journey each week on The Deep Dive. From navigating the chaos of motherhood and family to exploring the depths of grief and loss, we are just two best friends who process life together and with you guys. Discover our secrets to finding joy amidst the madness and get ready for unfiltered conversations about life, love, and everything in between. And nails. We talk a lot about nails. Now, community is everything to us at The Deep Dive. We believe in the power of connection and the strength that comes from supporting one another, and we would love to have you with us. So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
How did this happen for you?
Yes. So, well, from quite young, I think when people ask, where did it start? How did it start? The answer is always, I don't have much memory of it. My parents were the first ones to take notice. I think when you are that young and you're having these kinds of experiences, you think everybody else is seeing what you see. You don't have an understanding at that age, 3, 4, 5, that your world is different from anybody else's world. This is just your world. So my initial experiences were very just part of my life, I guess. You know, I can't really say what the first one was, but I do have many stories from parents and family that say, yeah, you were just very strange. Like, you knew things that you were not supposed to know. There was no way around it. They were factual. They were
names. People freaked out?
Yeah, I think so. I got quite lucky, or if you want to call it synchronicity or destiny or whatever you want to call it, but I got oddly handed to a Indonesian nanny who was also a psychic. And so she came to my parents and said, listen, your daughter's a psychic medium. And they were like, you're a great nanny. Just keep, you know, just keep nannying. But then I think that kind of stuck in their head. She had said some things amazingly to my family that turned out to be super true in a way that my engineer dad just really couldn't rationally discount. You know, he didn't go for a psychic reading, but she said some stuff that he was like, how did she know that? For example, when I was 7, we moved to Texas. And she had said years before that, you guys are going to move to a tropical land. It's going to be so humid and so like lush and tropical. And my dad, who, you know, my parents have always lived in the Netherlands. Nobody has ever left the Netherlands. There was no job on the horizon. There was no way we were ever living in the Netherlands. And we get to Texas and it's 110 degrees outside. We moved in August. The humidity is 100%. I mean, you cannot get more tropical feeling weather, you know? And so little things like that, because they seemingly came out of nowhere and there was just no way she could have predicted that. It just seemed completely out there, made him go, maybe there's something to this. He then got very intrigued and interested in crossing over with John Edward.
That was the first psychic medium I ever saw, was John Edward.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was on TV. And I remember sitting on the couch and he looks over at me. He's like, you do that. And so it was kind of a moment, a full circle moment now when I'm on stage. But I think those early days, I got so lucky. There were, I had a lot of weird experiences as a kid where wherever we went, somebody would come up to me and tell my parents, oh, you know, your daughter, she's a medium or she's a psychic.
But were you like seeing ghosts? Like, were you at school seeing like your teacher's grandfather?
No, it was really very clear to me very early on when I was elementary school, very early on, that this was not something anybody else was seeing. I was very observant as a kid. I was very quiet. I was very shy. So I immediately thought, this is not something we're going to be sharing. And it was something that my parents would ask questions about and kind of allowed in the house. It wasn't discouraged. But outside, I have very little memory of that because I really did not want to be a psychic medium. And so part of it was, I think, maybe a little traumatic in that I don't have any memory of my childhood. Most of it is, I do outside, you know, regular things, but not of that. It's mostly stories. But I do remember being hyper alert to the sense that I needed to be observant of what other people were seeing and doing and how they were acting. And then I would just fall into line. And especially we moved to the States when I was 7, 8 and didn't speak English. Very observant foreign child, you know, who was just going to kind of observe, not going to speak about it. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't have that many memories of that time. Worked really hard in my childhood to get rid of it. Just really did not want it at all. And really, by the time I was 10, had completely grown out of it, and I was very proud of this, didn't want to talk about it, would have like intense anger outbursts if my parents brought it up. My mom had bought a tarot deck for me when I was 10 as a Christmas present, and I think I like threw it against the wall. Like it was a bit, I was like, why me? This is stupid. I'm not a psychic. And then my parents were like, well, you know, when you were a kid, you really were. I wanted nothing to do with it. I was so angry.
So they had embraced it at the same time that you were trying to get away from it.
Because at this point, it was kind of a, you sure you don't want to hold on to it a little bit? You know, like, are you sure? Uh-huh. Like, it was kind of crazy. It was kind of cool. And I just did, I was a teenager. I wanted nothing to do with it.
So what changed?
Yeah, so I went to UCLA. I went in with a neuroscience major, very much wanted to be a surgeon, had all my sights set on that. And then in the first year, I became incredibly ill. And it was like taking my entire identity away from me because I couldn't go to school anymore. So I had to take a 6-month leave. I was on the sports team. I was an A+ student, couldn't go to class anymore. So everything was stripped.
So this hits to, you know, what this show is about. That sounds like a very difficult time.
It was. It was really hard for me. And
were you scared?
Very, very, very. Because my body wasn't working in the way I wanted it to. I became almost monastic in my sense of trying to hold on to any control. At the time, I had no tools. You know, I'm 19. I am not used to meditating. I've never meditated before. I don't have a yoga practice. I'm just a college student. And this is not in a time where all of this was as accessible or done. You know, I grew up with a mom who's like, I can't meditate. And I was like, yeah, me neither. I have too many thoughts, you know? And so that was just...
My mom couldn't use the VCR, so I couldn't either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It was like, no, we don't do that. And so I, at the encouragement, really, of my parents, who were quite desperate at this point, because no doctor could figure it out, I was getting worse and worse. I looked like I just, you know, my, especially for my parents.
What were your symptoms? Like fatigue?
I was incredibly tired. Yeah. I could sleep for 14 hours, eat very, very, very clean. Didn't go and do anything college based pretty much. Was in bed by 8:30. And I went home for Christmas break and I could barely walk from the car to the movie theater.
Wow.
And my mom like was like, something is not right. And then would sleep the rest of the afternoon. Like if we did anything, I needed a 6-hour nap.
And something like that inevitably brings on depression.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I was super depressed and super isolated. And I didn't feel like I was having a college experience. And I had a really hard time with it. You know, I couldn't go out to restaurants with my friends, couldn't eat at the cafeteria, couldn't go to the party, couldn't drink, couldn't go to class, really, even at the, you know, and my whole identity had been straight A student. So now we've also stripped away the sense of not doing well on tests, can't remember things. Like, it was a whole thing. So I took 6 months off. And in that time period, I had my dad go, well, maybe at this point, go see a psych, like, go see somebody, anybody. So I Yelped and I found this lady and I showed up in her tiny little Hollywood office.
You Yelped a psychic medium.
Yeah, I did. Because where else are you going to find a psychic medium? I don't know. At 19.
But after all those years of pushing it away and resisting it, was this had to have been a big deal.
Oh, yeah. I was not happy.
You were at your wit's end.
I walked in. I was like, this is stupid.
Okay. But you were really searching for something at this point to get you through.
Yeah. Maybe they were all right. You know, maybe at this point I should just at least go to one of the crazy people that have been telling me I've done this my whole life just to get some answers. Maybe they can just help me. That was kind of the idea. I walked in there going, okay, what do I want to know? I want to know how to fix my health and I want to know how I'm going to become a doctor. God,
I felt like this about going into therapy for the first time and now I'm a therapist.
Exactly. Like, this is really stupid, but maybe it works. Like, we'll give it a go. I'm desperate, you know? So I walked in and she had this little office in her bedroom, really. Like, it was, you know, a tiny little apartment. And I sit down and she looks at me and she goes, oh, you're a psychic medium. You're not living your purpose. And if you don't live your purpose, your health will get very bad and you will die. And I was like, well, that is not what I came here for. That is just, and I left very mad. I remember sitting on the curb in Hollywood and thought, this is very unfair. I just want to be a doctor. Just let me be a doctor. That is helping people. Please. Like, I don't understand. Why is this constantly, you know, following me? But then at the same time, you're 19 and you just want your health back and you think, okay, what's the worst that can happen? I will sit down. I will meditate. Fine.
What do you think it means to have a purpose in life? Like, what was, it's such an easy thing to throw out there.
Yeah.
You know, you're not in your purpose in life. What does that mean?
I think it's in alignment with who you are at the deepest sense of yourself. I don't think most people, it needs to be a job or a theme. I think it doesn't need to be a specific job, but it's often thematic. So when I talk about purpose these days, I refer to it as being the spirit core, which is the connection that you hold to divinity, to all that is, to your higher self, if you want to call it that, to the sense of how you're showing up in the world and what you want to accomplish. And I think for certain incarnations, if you want to call it, or journeys that we have in our physical bodies, sometimes it is a job, often it's a theme. So it can be through parenthood, it can be through the arts, it can be through service, it can be through communicating your own sense of self, even, you know, like a purpose could be, I'm going to figure out what I want to do. That could be
purpose. Do you think we all have a purpose?
Absolutely. I don't believe anybody comes into the world in a haphazard way, or that there's absolutely no connection to a sense of you wanting to come into the world and expand in some capacity. And I think that sense of expansion is the connection to purpose. We look at things in a super linear way. So we like the construct of, well, is it to be a writer or is it to be a movie star? You know, what's that sense of purpose? And I think it runs so much deeper than that.
I think it's hard for some people to realize that they're out of alignment. I think some of us get it. I know there's been times in my life when I've really known I was out of alignment with who I am or what I wanted to be doing. But I think also there's times when we blame it on other things. You know, we blame it on our environment around us or a person or a circumstance or something that's happened. And those are also often valid, and it's hard to tease them all apart and figure out, am I living my purpose? You know, I feel like it's such a broad thing, but it's also important. And I do think that we need to be thinking about this idea of purpose.
Yeah. I think a great place to start is learning to receive your own internal feedback. We are really almost addicted and dependent on external feedback. And very few people that I see in my office, and it's one of the things I like to teach as a very basic building block of how do we do intuition and spirit connection, is the sense of, do you know what your own voice sounds like? Do you know what you want? Do you know what you desire? Do you know where your energy is tethered? Do you know how to pull it back to the self? So that what you're looking for is the internal feedback of, I like this or I don't like this, versus immediately looking towards, well, what do you think I should do?
How do you think we become so disconnected from that? Just the external feedback, which I these days is so prevalent in social media, in television, and just everywhere we look, there is so much external feedback. Just looking at other people's lives all the time that we compare to, I can see how we just take more and more steps. What's something small we can do each day to kind of counteract all of that external feedback?
Yeah, we can get really simple and then also super difficult. All of this is simple but very hard at the same time, so baby steps. But I became very convinced that the spiritual practice is not outside the body, so we actually have to like really get embodied and really make friends with our body and have the sense of like, does this make me, just very basic, does it make me feel more expansive or does it make me feel constricted? Like this choice, this thing I'm doing, this behavior. That very simple question of, do I feel expanded when I'm doing this? Do I feel constricted when I do this? And it's your body speaking to you, but it's also your spirit speaking to you. Ultimately, the body is always the bridge. Like, we live in a physical body. So before we try to get into the idea of, well, what is the intuition and how is it speaking to me? See how your body's speaking to you first, because that's the bridge, you know? And I think for most people, you can get there and then you can get into the deeper layers of, are they your thoughts? Are they intuitive thoughts? All the rest of it.
That's amazing. I think that that's such an overlooked thing. You know, it's so simple and obvious, the body. You know, watching both of my parents die of cancer, I hated my physical self. I was so afraid of everything at that point. I had seen the two most important people in my life waste away to illness. And so I spent a lot of time not thinking about my body, but my healing really began when I started to do yoga. And it was similar to you. It was like a last ditch. I didn't know what was left to do at that point. And I was like living in Santa Monica. So of course you do yoga. And I dragged myself to the yoga studio. And it was the hardest thing I had done all of that time, just to sit in my body, to be present to my body. But that was where the healing began. And I think you're right. From there, I was able to access a lot more about myself and about the world.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Spirituality for the longest time has this subtext of woo-woo and out there. Like, the farther you can get out of your body, the better. But I find that that's really not the most powerful. And for myself, even, I felt like I hit a point in, after I'd been doing this work for quite some time, where I just hit a point of, oh, I can't go much farther if I don't actually get back into my body right now. Like, this is a limitation, because we cannot live a spiritual life here without the physical. Like, that is just not possible.
I remember the moment my father died and I was at his bedside, and I had never seen a dead body. I'd never seen someone die, and he was gone. Like, his body was still there, but my father was not there anymore. It was so, there was no question that my father was gone and there was his body. And I had this realization that we are something more than these bodies.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about right now, how important the body is, but we are also something so much bigger than this. And I can't really explain it other than to have had that experience of watching someone I loved so much leave their body and knowing that he didn't die, his body did.
Yeah. And that gets reflected so many times. I worked in hospice for a little bit. Actually, when I took that break, I, being the type A personality that I was like, well, I can't do nothing. I'll just sit beside people who are also apparently dying. So, I went into hospice work for a summer, and I, without people knowing that I was doing this, it was an interesting time because I was deciding whether or not I wanted to do the psychic mediumship, still kind of running away from it, and having nurses reflect back to me every day these moments of these spiritual encounters, very rational, Texas-based religious nurses who were telling me every day about their spiritual experiences, not knowing that I was on the fence, and me experiencing it as well, just by being in the room. And I think that's so true. Anyone who's kind of been in that space, it has this moment where you're like, huh, what is the body? You know, what is the soul, consciousness, life force? And I think it's a brilliant place even to start for people who are skeptical, because science has yet to find an explanation for that. Like, we don't know what consciousness is. It doesn't exist in a certain part of your brain. They cannot find like a single point. You know, it's this sense of being, and we don't know where it originates from.
can't get enough of your favorite Lemonada Media podcasts? By subscribing to Lemonada Premium today, you'll gain access to fun and inspiring bonus content from all of our podcasts across the Lemonada Media Network. As a subscriber, you can listen to never-before-heard interview excerpts, behind-the-scenes segments, and continue to uncover new ways to make life suck less through all of our exclusive subscriber audio. Check out a free trial of Lemonada Premium today in the Apple Podcast app by clicking on our podcast logo and then the subscribe button.
People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. Manifest it and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to go from there to ask you some really silly questions.
Cool. Let's do it.
Okay. Thinking about our loved ones on the other side, can they see us all the time? I always hear this question at your shows that I've been to, like, can they see us when we're going to the bathroom? Right. Can they see us when we're having sex? One. Like, does my mom know like this about me?
Yeah. Well, I think when we leave the physical form, we are continuing to be as tethered to our loved ones as we are here. And that doesn't mean if you had a terrible relationship that somebody isn't tethered to you. That's not what it means. But none of us go through life living as Siamese twins unless we are a Siamese twin. So there is no relationship that you have in your life where you don't have time to yourself or you don't just like have space to be your own person. And we will never know somebody as well as they kind of know themselves, right? Like we can't crawl into somebody's body. And it's similar. I think those on the other side, from what I gather, are really not interested in that the everyday. Like they don't
I would
care.
Not be interested.
It is like not an important part of their mission, their life. If you need them, hey, they're showing up. If there's a celebration, if there's a grief, if there is something to be shared, they are there. Outside of that, they don't really care.
What is your day-to-day life? You are this young, beautiful, vibrant woman.
I think, yeah.
And you know, like when you go on dates, are you seeing the dead grandparent? Like, can you tell if you're going to end up with this guy or not? Like, what do you? I don't know. Tell me.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. I tend to turn off when I'm not working, so I'm certainly not going out into the world fully blasted open. I do like to hold on to
I think Teresa Caputo kind of ruined this for all of us. She gave us this idea that you're at the grocery store and you're seeing everybody's dead people. And
yeah, I have some big moral issues with it, but also it's just not sustainable. I think I do better work like anybody does when your tap isn't on all day and ultimately we'll just like run out of water, you know? I think in my case, I like to turn it off and turn it back on so that when I do work, it's powerful and it's there.
I do the same. I'll sit next to somebody on an airplane and they'll ask what I do and I'll tell them I'm a therapist and they immediately get all freaked out. And yeah. I'm like, you know what? I'm not on right now. I don't want to analyze you.
Exactly. Don't have my therapist hat on, not looking at you from those, from those eyes. So it's really not. And I do like to differentiate that because I do also just like to live a normal life. I don't think that's the interesting thing about psychic mediums is we don't live on a mountaintop. We don't get to be monks. Like we have to be with people who live real lives. And in order for us to be able to bridge the gap, we need to know what a real life is. And so I certainly live a very real life with all the ups and downs that come with it. But, you know, it's funny because for the longest time, I would have friends look at me and go, Fleur, literally everyone could see that, and this is your job. So I'm not quite sure how you didn't see that one in your day to day. And my answer to that initially was because I really severed it. I was like, okay, I'm a psychic medium. I can't use this in my day to day. Like, I will not look. I will not see. And now I've kind of become to this place of going, no, actually, I want to be a very intuitive person in my own life. I want to bridge that gap. Maybe not in full work mode, but I use it much more now. And I do really try to live a life in which I'm actually always asking my intuition what it thinks before I take in external feedback, or when I'm looking at things in the way that they seem, I like to check in a little bit. for me, right? And that's the thing. It's like the intuition for me about my choice, not necessarily doing somebody else's reading.
I have practices that I've been cultivating for years that are like this: meditation, mindfulness, checking in with my intuition. But sometimes I get hit with something in my life, or, you know, the world gets hit with something, and I just don't feel strong enough to use those. Like, I'm not there, and I'll just really struggle. How do you get back to those places, or what do you do in those moments when you can't do those kind of higher practices?
Yeah, I go simple. I go really simple. I turn to actually the neuroscience stuff mostly, because ultimately what we want is the nervous system to settle down. And when we're in that space of activated fight flight, I think like that for me is the place to start. So a lot of simple neuro-based practices that we can do, which is like fluttering the lips, totally relaxes the nervous system, gets you out of that flight state of panic. Or even breathing in twice as long as you breathe in releases the parasympathetic nervous system. And ultimately, we can't do any kind of intuitive work unless we are in a calm mental space. So that's always my first, is like, I just really start to, and I actually, I really, for me, it feels like a toolbox. Like sometimes if I can't even remember to do that, I go back, I'm like, okay, what are the tools that I've used in the past? Let me just write them all down. What do I want to do right now? Like, what is the one thing?
Yeah, one thing at a time.
Just one thing. Yeah.
Not overwhelming yourself.
Not overwhelming, and then not holding like a huge expectation. I think maybe I'm in a little bit of a category that I do have to sometimes push through it, because I have to go do a reading and you're a therapist. So sometimes we just have to shift into it. And I, at this point, know the practices that will get me there, but they always start simple. And if I am having a hard week or something that's just debilitating, just simple, simple, simple.
I think that's so smart. I think sometimes we just take on too much in order. We think we have to do too many things in order to get to a better place, but starting with just little tiny things is so helpful in the way to kind of move through that, those hard moments. What have you, in kind of wrapping up, what have you learned in all this work about humans?
What have I learned about humans? Well, nobody's going to skip grieving. That's just not going to happen. Read for pretty much every kind of person on the planet now, you know, read for one of the top three most rich men in the world. And I have read for people who couldn't afford my services for free. And the commonality is we're all looking for meaning. We're all looking for connection. It doesn't matter what package that comes in. It's just the truth of the human experience. And I really feel like at this point, I believe life continues in some capacity. Do I know the exact way that it does? No. But I do really believe that. And I feel that if we as humans can connect that to ourselves, if we can have an experience or a moment, a time in which we touch spirituality, and even that's scientific. Brené Brown says this: you cannot have resilience without spirituality. It's impossible. And I love that sense of like, it actually is innate to who we are. We can't do life without it.
This is why I love talking to you.
I love talking to you.
Lastly, you have a book that just came out in the UK.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that and how can we find it?
Yes, called Moving Beyond: Access Your Intuition, Psychic Skills, and Spirit Connection. And it is about doing this yourself. So it is written through stories and experiences, ways to validate the theories and the practical kind of point of view I bring on all of this. You can find it on my website. You can find it on my Instagram. There's links everywhere, but it is called Moving Beyond.
Thank you. We will put that in the show notes. Thank you so much, Fleur.
Thank you.
I look forward to many more conversations with you.
Same. I love having them. Thank you so much.
I think one of the things that I love most about Fleur is that she's also skeptical, or at least curious about her own abilities. However this conversation landed to you, I want to reiterate that what I really believe is important here is opening yourself up to the idea of connecting to your loved one, no matter what you believe. In all my years of working with people who are grieving, what I've come to understand is that we must develop new relationships with the people that we've loved and lost. We don't have to let go of them. Instead, we find new ways to hold on to them. So for this week's practice, I want you to open up to the possibility of cultivating a new kind of relationship with someone you've lost. Here are some things to try, besides seeing a psychic medium, which you could do as well. Write them a letter. You'll be surprised by how moving and profound it can be to sit down and just write, "Dear Dad," and then tell him how you've been since he died, or ask him questions, or apologize, or simply tell him how much you miss him. Create a weekly ritual that incorporates your loved one. Cook something or have a meal each week that they loved. Watch a movie they liked or go for a walk somewhere they enjoyed. Talk to them about other people. Tell your children about them or ponder in conversation what they would think about how you're doing. Talk to them in your head. Ask them questions or tell them things. If you were close with someone, I guarantee you can think of almost any question to ask them. And if you close your eyes, you can hear the answer. For instance, I can ask my mom what she would think of my husband or the top I'm wearing. And even though she's been gone for 25 years, I know exactly what she'd say. She would hate my shirt. We never get over the loss of someone we love. Instead, we learn to live with that loss. But living with it doesn't mean letting go. It means holding on. Thank you for listening. I'm wishing all of you a peaceful holiday season, and I look forward to spending time with you in the new year. If you want to reach out, I'd love to hear how you're doing. Send me an email at newday@lemonadamedia.com. Talk to you next year. New Day is a Lemonada original. The show is produced by Jackie Danziger, Liliana Maria Percy Ruiz, and Ariana Giles. Kat Yore is our engineer. Music is by Hannes Brown. Executive producers are Stephanie Whittleswax, Jessica Cordova Kramer, and Claire Bidwell Smith. New Day is produced in partnership with the Wellbeing Trust, the Jed Foundation, and Education Development Center. Help others find our show by leaving us a rating and writing a review. Follow us at Lemonada Media across all social platforms, or find me at ClaireBidwellSmith.com. Join our Facebook group to connect with me and fellow New Day listeners at facebook.com/groups/NewDayPod. You can also get bonus content and behind-the-scenes material by subscribing to Lemonada Premium. You can subscribe right now on the Apple Podcasts app by clicking on our podcast logo and then the subscribe button. Thank you for listening.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere, and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people, and we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Last Day from Lemonada Media explores the moments that change us. Those times where you look back and say, whoa, one day I was myself and the next I wasn't. I'm Stephanie Whittleswax, and I have seen time and time again how sharing these stories can change lives. So, do you have a moment in your life that changed you fundamentally and forever? What happened? How did you move through it? And how did you eventually start again? If you'd like to share your story, go to bit.ly/lastdaystories, bit.ly/lastdaystories. We can't wait to hear from you.